This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. PBS TV's Nova described drones as unmanned flying robots, some as large as jumbo jets, others as small as birds, that do things straight out of science fiction. These flying machines have been used very successfully by the U.S. military, but are not without controversy in that arena. And now, the controversy is spreading because there are those who want to use drone technology outside of theaters of war. The same unmanned aircraft that can launch a missile can also be used for surveillance, and some police departments want them for that. Drones also have been used in agriculture and in journalism. There's a drone being used right now over the Olympic ski slopes in Sochi, Russia, to bring high-definition aerial pictures to your TV. And, of course, Amazon.com has floated the idea of using these devices to deliver packages to your door. In fact, according to the AP, that started yesterday in the United Arab Emirates. They announced yesterday that they have begun testing their own unmanned delivery drones, which aim to quickly get official documents like driver's licenses, ID cards, and permits to that country's residents. But as nifty as this may sound, there are serious privacy concerns associated with drones, as well as safety, ethical, and legal implications for unmanned flying machines. And we're going to talk about them this hour. Matt Waite is a professor of practice at the College of Journalism and Mass Communications and founder of the Drone Journalism Lab at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Incidentally, prior to taking his current position, he was the principal developer of the Pulitzer Prize-winning website PolitiFact, which fact-checks what politicians say. And you ditched all that for this? Welcome to the program.
Hey man, you're talking about flying robots. What could be wrong with that?
Exactly right. Also with us is Kyle Snyder, director of the Next Gen Air Transportation Center at North Carolina State University. There, he's responsible for coordinating all unmanned aircraft systems activities in the state, including military, academic, research, and civilian uses. Thank you for being with us as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. And here in our studio is WFAE's Ben Bradford, who has been covering all this for our news department, WFAE News. And in fact, you've talked to Matt in the course of your reporting.
That's right. Matt was very helpful on a story I did a few weeks ago.
Now, I don't remember when I first started hearing about drones, but I do remember that just prior to my first starting hearing about drones, I heard the military say, we have a new secret weapon that's going to be a game changer. And then all of a sudden, we started hearing about drones. Was that the weapon, do you think, that they were talking about? Has it been a game changer?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's been a big part of the strategy that we've seen in the Middle East and in all those places over there. One of the things that's happening now, though, right, is that you're starting to hear about, kind of like you mentioned, you're starting to hear about these things coming over here, both for law enforcement purposes and also for all these different commercial purposes. But I think that part of it also is just kind of describing what a drone is.
Okay.
And that can be anything from a little RC vehicle, right, that you pick up over at Toys R Us and flies around for you buy it for $30.
RC being remote control.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Right, and that's a drone.
Actually, I was coming home from South Park Mall after Christmas through a neighborhood near South Park, and I saw this series of blue, red, and green lights hovering and moving back and forth over the trees, and I thought, that's either a drone or a UFO. So I drove toward it. And it was hovering at treetop level, and then it dipped down. I stopped the car. It dipped down to the hood of my car and then rose back up. And I looked over on the street corner, and there was a guy controlling it, obviously a Christmas present. Is that a drone?
That's a drone. That's a drone by the FAA's definition of what a drone is. And on the other end of it, you have military vehicles that are the size of buses that are also drones. And really the only thing that makes a drone is an unmanned aerial vehicle, right? A UAV or unmanned aerial system, a UAS. That's what you hear them called.
And we're going to get into this as we go through the program. But if a guy in a neighborhood near South Park can get for Christmas an unmanned aerial vehicle that can hover at treetop level and swoop down to the hood of my car and he can legally operate it, what why are we having this conversation?
Well, because I think that there's a difference between being able to have people flying around in their backyard and saying, okay, we're now open for business to have something like Amazon, who delivers however many, you know, hundreds of thousands of packages or whatever a day. And if each one of those was delivered by drone, think about how many you'd have in the sky. Well, then all of a sudden it creates these other complications that, as you said, I'm sure we'll discuss.
How many drones is – and does anybody know the answer to this? How many drones the military is actually using at the moment?
About 10,000 right now is what they've got in theater operational, and about 70% of those are less than 50 pounds in size.
So they're tiny.
Small.
So what are they doing? Are the smaller ones primarily for surveillance?
They are look ahead, overwatch. As your guys are coming up on the scene, they may not know exactly what's going on. They're using those to kind of get a quick look. And then as activities are going on, if you only need, say, an hour flight over your head, they're using those for that kind of surveillance and really just kind of overwatch to keep general situation awareness.
So the smaller ones are being powered by batteries, and the bigger ones are using regular fossil fuels to stay up for a long amount of time? Because some of these drones can stay up for an extremely long amount of time, right?
Matt?
So are we the only military using drones, or are there other countries that use these things as well?
I don't know of a country that does not have some kind of either development program or operational program in place right now.
And how many drones are in use within the continental United States?
Good question. Go
ahead, Matt.
As I say, I think it's unknowable. Just if you define a drone as something, you know, that flies, you know, in my hand all the way up through, you know, military grade applications, you know, it's an unknowable number.
Well, let's talk about it from this point of view, because obviously the guy that I'm referencing near a shopping mall with a toy that can fly unmanned through remote control, that technically is a drone, I suppose, but that's perfectly legal. But then there are drones that are not legal because the FAA has to regulate them. How many regulated FAA drones are there in operation?
So the FAA approved about 530 certificates of authorization last year, 2013, for legal flight operations in the country, domestic operations in the national airspace. So that's everything from the smalls, 2 pounds, 3 pounds, up to bigger systems, and that includes DOD, Department of Defense, certificates of authorization, too. That's the FAA's way.
Are these all experimental vehicles, or are they actually being used for applications for which they're, you know, they're either commercial or military or law enforcement requirements for?
There is one commercially approved drone use by the FAA, and that's out in remote Alaska, and it's being used for to do environmental surveys of marine mammals.
And why is that one authorized when I'm sure there are thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of others that want to be and are not?
Sure. Well, I think, one, that's a great question. And two, the specific reason for that authorization is because it's in such a remote rural part of Alaska that it doesn't have the same kind of concerns that the FAA is worried about with drones being anywhere nearer to habitated places.
And Kyle, as I understand it, the Next Gen Air Transportation Center has an officially sanctioned test site in Hyde County for drones, which is sanctioned by the FAA. And at the moment, you're the only state employee allowed to use drones. What are you testing down there?
So that is correct. I've actually got three locations across the state, but Hyde County and the Hyde County Airport on Eastern North Carolina is our primary flight location. I've got three aircraft that are approved to fly there, and we are doing agriculture research and safe flight integration into the national airspace research.
Agriculture research being what?
Looking at crop stress, crop health, looking at can we help farmers with yield predictions? How do we give better intelligence down to crop consultants that are looking at multiple fields? So we just started flying last March, flew through the summer, and we're going to kick that up again probably in March or April.
What size vehicle are you using, and how big an area are you surveilling?
So the area I've got approved right now by the FAA is about 1,700 acres, and we are flying a 3-pound airplane, a 9-pound airplane with about a 6-foot wingspan, and a 10-pound helicopter.
And how high off the ground do these vehicles fly?
Max altitude for all three of those inside my box right now is 400 feet.
So that doesn't sound like, even if you had thousands of these operating, it doesn't sound like it would be a problem for air traffic as long as you keep it away from approaches to airports because you're well below where an airplane would fly. Why is the FAA concerned about that?
Yeah, you know, I think that maybe the easiest thing to do is to go straight to the horse's mouth, right? I talked to FAA Administrator Michael Huerta, and here's what he had to say about it.
If you have unfettered use for commercial purposes, there will be conflicts with populated areas, with private pilots that might be operating within the airspace system.
So basically, there are two separate kind of ways I think you can break it down and do, right? One is the safety of the population, and two is the safety with other planes, right? So part of it is if you have these things, and even if they're just a couple of pounds, and they fall out of the sky, what do you do? How do you do liability for that? In terms of course, you know, coordinating with other pilots, making sure that you're staying away from airports, even if they are under 400 feet. If you have one that's, you know, Matt Waite, actually, you were talking to me about this, about if you have one that that cuts someone, right? Your blades are sharp.
They are, and they spin very, very fast. And you know, you have to be careful. I've heard the multirotors described as flying lawnmowers.
Wow.
Which, you know, it's kind of funny, but it's actually true. When you've got a pretty big multirotor going with blades that are, you know, a foot wide, and it gets cranked up, you realize really quickly, if I got my flesh near there, I'm going to the emergency room.
And when you talk about multirotors, these are essentially helicopters that have, five or six or seven or eight rotary blades on them to keep this tiny vehicle afloat.
Yeah, they're generally even numbers, so four, six, and eight.
Okay.
And the, you know, generally the more rotors, the more lift, the more payload you can carry. So we have a hex that we're working on, and when we're working to get it approved by the FAA, and it could carry, you know, a full-size digital SLR camera. So you're talking, you know, maybe 5-6 pounds.
Mm-hmm. So, and Brad, you reported back in January here on WFAE about a company called Aerial Captures in Concord, in which their founder described how the camera on board that aircraft, that drone, helps them get a much better picture of what they're doing to try to capture for their clients. Who are their clients, and what are they shooting for them with these drones, and how are they doing it without approval?
Sure. So that's about the most simple use that you can think of, which is basically they have these they're just essentially beefed up versions of what you see in stores. They're these little $700 quadcopters, so they've got four rotors on them, and they have a little camera attached to the bottom of them, and they fly them over, and they use them for they do two different things. One is they use them for special events, so they've done things for the Special Olympics. They had they did a Tough Mudder, one of those races where people are going under, going into the mud and doing kind of an obstacle course. And they'll basically film those, and they'll package those mixed with regular people with cameras and make a film out of it, kind of a promotional video. On the other end, they also do – their mainstay business has been real estate, flying over houses that are up for sale and paid for by the real estate company, by the realtor, and giving a different view of it. And it just gives people – it's another part of the package.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I saw on one of those house shows, on one of those shopping networks, that the use of one of those in Los Angeles, where they wanted to show a sweeping aerial view of this building, and they used a drone to do that pretty well.
Did you buy it?
I did not buy it. Oh. I can't afford it. I'm working public radio. We got to take a break. We're coming right back with more in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, presenting a fine jewelry winter event now through Friday. Donald Hack Diamonds across from South Park Mall or at DonaldHack.com. And the Fellowship for the Performing Arts, presenting C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, Saturday and Sunday, three shows only in Knight Theater, bringing C.S. Lewis to life with lively wit and generous humor. Tickets at OnStage.com. Well, we all have habits, some good, some bad, some we try to break, others we try to create. It's a tough thing to do. Habits have such a big impact on our lives. Maybe we should better understand why we do, what it is that we do. Well, New York Times business reporter Charles Duhigg has studied the power of habit, why habits exist, and how they can be changed. And he's going to share some fascinating observations about all that in an encore presentation of Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, star college football player Michael Sam could become the first openly gay player in the NFL. The news comes as the Department of Justice vows to enforce federal rights for same-sex couples, pushing the boundaries of gay rights in law and sports.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the use of drones domestically and some of the precautions and concerns surrounding all of that with Matt Waite, who's a professor of practice in the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Kyle Snyder is director of Next Gen Air Transportation Center at NC State University, and Ben Bradford has reported on this for WFAE News. He joins us in our studio, and in a short while, we're going to be talking to somebody from the ACLU about privacy concerns surrounding the use of drones. Matt, you are the director of the Drone Journalism Lab at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. So what is drone journalism?
Well, it pretty much is what it says on the tin, is we're trying to figure out how to use small unmanned systems to report news. I kind of got the idea for this at a digital mapping conference in Southern California in 2011, and I saw this company called Gatewing, and they were selling a product called the X100 that they build as a fully autonomous aerial mapping platform. It was a plane that had a camera in the bottom of it and a tablet computer attached to it, and you pulled up a map of a field, say you wanted photographed, you drew a rectangle around it, you said, I want to take off from here and I want to land here. You sent that flight plan into the computer brain on board the UAS, and off it went, and it would fly back and forth and back and forth and take pictures of the ground with GPS coordinates attached to each picture. And it would land, and you'd pull the memory card out of the camera and stitch it together into a composite image and drop it into a mapping system in, you know, a matter of minutes. And my brain exploded. I thought of every hurricane and tornado and flood and wildfire and, you know, pretty much every biblical event that I'd ever been to as a reporter. And I thought, if I'd had this thing, I could have been doing pretty amazing journalism in a matter of minutes.
What you're talking about is going to be the next wave of Chopper 9, Sky 3, Doppler Radar Plus technology, whiz bang technology that TV stations are going to buy, because these TV stations already do have helicopters and some have fixed wing aircraft, and they do have all this weather stuff, and they use it as a competitive tool. This drone technology takes away the need for the helicopter and the need for the fixed-wing aircraft, and it's cheap. Every station's going to have 15 of these in the air all the time, aren't they?
Well, yes and no. I think you're 100% right that they're going to. I mean, it's no mystery why my phone rings a couple of times a week, and it's a senior vice president of this station and that station, and they're asking me about this stuff. Which happens constantly. I think you're right. I think they will have 10 or 15 of these things. The thing I always tell people, and this is how I date myself immediately, and I'm sure there's a segment of your audience that's not going to have any idea what I'm talking about here, but imagine the OJ chase in Southern California back in the early 90s when there was this low speed chase of the white Bronco, and that was a helicopter covered event. Mm-hmm. The types of small UASs that we're talking about for journalism, you know, you'd need a Ryder truck full of them to keep sending them up, because they fly for about 15 or 20 minutes.
But
and that thing went on for hours.
But on a slow-speed chase like that, they could have descended to the windshield of the car that O.J. was allegedly in and seen what was going on in the car. I'm curious as to what the problem here is, because we do, as you say, we've had these helicopter-covered police chases on television. TV uses airborne vehicles to cover traffic, to cover fires, to do aerial beauty shots. Why is this a problem to use drones in place of that?
Well, let's take the example you're talking about with, you know, flying down to the windows and getting a nice up close picture of Al Cowlings as he's driving the white Bronco. We would not want a UAS operator to be flying down in traffic. I don't think law enforcement would think very highly of you interfering in any way with a situation like that. You know, even if it were a high speed chase, let's say, you know, it's even a hostage situation, you are now putting it into a very dangerous situation. You're basically begging the driver of the car to take their eyes off the road, and you have now assumed a massive amount of responsibility and liability. The thing about manned aircraft with journalists right now is that there are a system of rules in place that are very clear, and the technology is in place that the helicopter can stay high enough and far enough away from the situation, and they can use a zoom lens to get up close. Where with UASs, there's a lot more temptation to get close because you can, and there aren't those kind of clear, time-tested rules in place, other than the FAA just saying, no, you can't do it.
And of course, if the media has these things, the police department will have them. They certainly want them, and they could use them for the exact same way. They could fly down to the windshield of the car and look in as the chase goes on.
Yeah, and I think it's the exact same problem, is that, you know, there's a large series of questions, and this comes up a lot when we're talking about this stuff in the lab, is, you know, because you can, should you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think UASs in a lot of ways present a temptation to do things that you normally wouldn't because you can. And we need to think through those things pretty clearly.
And that's where a whole new set of concerns comes in. There are privacy, ethical, and legal issues to contend with, and at least some of the concerns need to be addressed, as you just said, Matt, before the skies over America are filled with these unmanned flying machines. Sarah Preston is policy director for the ACLU of North Carolina, and we've asked her to join us to share some of that organization's concerns and some of the steps that they're taking to ensure that those concerns are, in fact, addressed. Sarah Preston, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. ACLU is not opposed. Let's be clear here. You are not opposed to the use of drones, but you are concerned about their unfettered use. So when it comes to drones, is the ACLU most concerned with privacy issues, or are there other concerns that you have?
Certainly, I think privacy is our biggest concern. You know, we've talked before a little bit about things like First Amendment sort of protest type situations where, you know, for example, when you guys had the Democratic Convention a few years ago, there were helicopters overhead all the time and there were protesters out. You know, for the cost of those, whatever, 10 helicopters, you could have probably like 100 drones flying overhead, and would that make people less likely to come out and protest? So we do have some additional concerns, but our number one concern is really privacy.
Mm. And I guess if these drones can be used to descend on police chases, on the cars, and look into the windows of the cars, they could also be used to descend on a building and look into the windows of a building, even a home. Could they not? They could fly to your backyard and look through the back kitchen window to see if you're in the building. Is that a concern of the ACLU?
That's exactly right. I think, you know, there's the sort of obvious what helicopters do now, which is fly over, you know, property and look on the property and see if anything untoward is going on. But certainly drones are smaller, they're more maneuverable, they can hover in a way that helicopters perhaps cannot, and they also are much, much quieter, so you wouldn't necessarily know they're there, and they could be much closer to your property.
You say
so
that,
that's definitely a concern.
You say that the ACLU wants to make sure that the operators of drones abide by, and this is a quote, the same constitutional protections they have to abide by when doing other types of surveillance. Aren't rules about the aren't those rules independent of the technology being used? In other words, if there are rules about privacy, does it matter whether you're in a helicopter or a police car with binoculars or a drone?
Well, there's some things that I think can sort of be extrapolated from current law, but it's never been, you know, case law has never been interpreted because drones just haven't been used yet to figure out what, you know, what how precisely it's going to work with a drone. And I think, you know, the basic constitutional protection is in the Fourth Amendment that says, you know, we have a right to be protected against unreasonable searches and seizures. And that's kind of the baseline. But what we'd like to see is a little more specifics and really just a direction to law enforcement that if they are going to use drones to collect evidence against people or to basically to gather evidence or other information pertaining to criminal conduct, that they get a warrant. We think that's probably the most straightforward. It's the easiest for law enforcement to understand, and it's the easiest for people to understand as well.
And right now that's not in the law because these devices are new, and therefore there's no reference to these devices in the law.
Well,
right?
So states are currently developing their various laws. And in North Carolina last year in the budget, the legislature added a law that essentially makes drone use by law enforcement, unwarranted drone use, illegal. So right now we don't have it for law enforcement here. There's an exception where the chief information officer in the government can give out exemptions, but there's a whole process that has to go through. And essentially right now it's not happening here in North Carolina for law enforcement use.
In fact, Kyle, the legislature has ruled temporarily that police cannot use drones. What provoked that ruling?
So Bid actually laid it out very well there. The that governance structure that we put in place that came out with the budget last year outlines no state agency can procure or operate without without approval from the CIO's office. And the intent with that is to make sure that we've got the data management plans and the policies and the structure in place to protect our citizens and to protect the airspace and other users. So the intent with that was to kind of do a little bit more homework even before the FAA gets involved to say, yes, you're approved to fly that aircraft. We're saying, why are we flying in the first place and what are we planning to accomplish with that?
And there's kind of an interesting thing happening also right now, which is that in addition to the law enforcement side of it, there's a what's called a legislative research committee, which is basically a committee that's tasked with writing a bill. Mm-hmm. And they're meeting about commercial use for unmanned drones in North Carolina. And if you look at who the chairs are of that committee, on one hand, you've got Representative Mitchell Setzer, who I spoke to in my story, and his sole concern is privacy. How do we keep things private? And then the other co-chair of it is Representative John Torbett from Gaston County, and he actually is a principal at a defense contract firm that sells drones to the military. And he's talked about the possibility of North Carolina kind of being I think he described it as being the Detroit of drone use. So looking at kind of how we could be in the drone business.
And to be clear, that committee actually is also supposed to study governmental use and make recommendations as to protecting privacy.
Now, the ACLU also says we need to find ways to enjoy the benefits of this new technology without bringing us closer to a surveillance society in which our every move is monitored, tracked, recorded, and scrutinized by the government. Isn't that already happening? When you think about the NSA revelations, isn't that already happening? And with traffic and security cameras on streets and in businesses, aren't we already being surveilled? Aren't we always on camera somewhere, someplace?
Well, I don't know about always, but certainly very often we are. Whenever we're, you know, in a public place, I think we should maybe sort of assume that there's probably a camera around, whether it's private or government surveillance. There's, you know, cameras in a lot of areas. I think part of what we're concerned about with the ACLU is that there really is this sort of infrastructure, which you've just sort of detailed, of surveillance that the government has set up. And because of a variety of technologies, it's easier and easier for the government to keep tabs on the citizens if it chooses to. Basically what we're trying to do is catch laws up with this technology, including drones, but other technologies as well, and make sure that the laws are actually providing guidelines and protections for our privacy so that we don't sort of erode privacy any more than it already has been.
You mentioned that the ACLU wants to make sure the police departments get warrants to use these things, and you referenced, I think, Ben, North Carolina Republican Representative Mitchell Setzer of Catawba County, who agrees with that. And the question, I guess, is why? I mean, police have long flown helicopters over high-crime areas without warrants. They've added extra patrol cars on streets in high-crime areas without warrants. In Charlotte, we have this special, what's the word that we use when we have a big event downtown and they declare it a special event. And mm-hmm. so you can't carry packages into that event, and they have the right to search your packages if you have them on your person. Mm-hmm. What's the difference in all of that, which we already have, and putting a drone in the sky to keep an eye on things?
Yeah, I think that part of it is just the creepiness factor. This idea that you've got some machine watching you without a person being there. I think there's something about that just, first of all, just kind of rubs us the wrong way.
But if you're not, I'm going to go back to this old argument. If I'm not doing anything wrong and it's going to prevent a Boston Marathon bomber, why do I care?
Well, I think, you know, for the ACLU, just because you're not doing anything wrong doesn't mean that you want the government to know everything that you are doing. You know, you don't necessarily want the government to know what hospitals you're going to or whether you're going to AA meetings every week or, you know, that kind of thing. You're not doing anything wrong. You're not breaking the law, but you don't want necessarily the government to know all of that information. You consider that private and you consider it protected. But I also think that drones are a little different from helicopters. Just partially something that's already been mentioned. You can acquire a drone for probably around the cost of an expensive car, somewhere around $44,000. Actually, you can acquire much simpler ones for a lot less than that. Whereas a helicopter is going to cost you, you know, anywhere from $500,000 to $3 million, and an additional $200 to $400 an hour to fly. It's very expensive to fly a helicopter. It's much, much cheaper to get a drone. And therefore, you could have a lot more drones. And the FAA has said there could be as many as 30,000 operating above the United States by 2020. I think it's just the number, the sheer number, and the fact that we might not even know they're there that is creeping people out.
You know, Matt, the argument used to be the reason for regulating radio and television stations is that not everybody could operate one because you had to have a license and there were a limited number of frequencies. And now that we have the internet, anybody can do a broadcast, a podcast, a video podcast, an oral podcast. And so we've seen the democratization of broadcasting all over the world, the democratization of everything because of digital technology. This sounds like an extension of that. I can have a drone. Yeah. You can have a drone. We can all have drones.
And actually, I think there are stories from the early days of radio, which you know kind of birthed the FCC, where you'd have somebody buy a transmitter and they'd move it into a town and they'd compete with their other radio folks and they would just move their signal over and walk all over them and block them out. And so the radio industry was actually begging for the government to come in and regulate them because they needed to keep the spectrum clean, where you know you wouldn't be walking all over everybody's signal. I think you're going to see that same thing again. I mean, imagine drones covering a large sporting event, and you've got all of the local media there. You've got local bloggers. You've got fans with them, and suddenly you have not one or two, but 30 or 40 of them. You're going to have spectrum management problems to deal with. You're going to have, you know, it's beyond the safety and other issues. But let me, since I'm a journalism professor, I got to flog the First Amendment for a moment and go back to this issue of surveillance. And not only that, but I'll throw in journalism too. There are some really interesting First Amendment arguments to be had here. And one of which is, you know, you have a right to free assembly. And if the government knows who you assemble with and where you assemble and when you assemble and why you're assembling, that's not free assembly. At the same token, the First Amendment guarantees me a right to photograph in a public place. And so there's a balance to be struck here.
Sarah Preston, can you hang through the break?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break and come right back with more of this conversation about drones in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Foundation for the Carolinas, inspiring the art of philanthropy. The annual meeting, April 3rd, features Eric Whitaker, Grammy-winning composer and creator of the virtual choir concept. Details at fftc.org. And Actors Theater presenting, By the Way, Meet Vera Stark, a glimpse into the life of an African-American actress who broke the barriers of 1930s Hollywood. February 20th to March 15th. Details at atcharlotte.org. StarCollegeFootball.org. Star college football player Michael Sam could become the first openly gay player in the NFL. That news comes as the Department of Justice vows to enforce federal rights for same-sex couples. Diane and her guests talk about how advances in gay rights are shaping law and sports. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have something to say about our conversation about drones. WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a place to start, and we're coming right back.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. You know, lots of us feel sentimental about our old cars.
I call mine rusty.
Appropriately so, I might add. Well, if it's time to trade up, why not do something meaningful with your beloved old car and turn it into Morning Edition or All Things Considered?
That's what happens when you donate it to the station.
Find out how easy it is to support your favorite WFAE shows using the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. Learn more at WFAE.org. And thanks for your support.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the use of drones domestically in this country by law enforcement, by companies, by businesses, by news departments, because that's going to be the next wave of gizmos that TV stations will be, and radio stations will be talking about in their arsenal of news covering equipment. Matt Waite is a professor of practice at the College of Journalism and Mass Communications and the head of the get the right title here.
The Drone Journalism Lab.
Thank you. At the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Kyle Snyder is with us by phone. He's the director of the Next Gen Air Transportation Center at NC State University. Ben Bradford's a reporter who's covering UFAE News. And Sarah Preston is with us for a short amount of time, policy director of the ACLU of North Carolina. They're not against drones. They have serious concerns about them, and they want to make sure that they're in on the conversation. The ACLU, Sarah, says that the use of domestic drones should be decided by the public's representatives, not by police departments, and the policy should be clear, written, and open to the public. So I have to ask you this, and I know that the legislature here is taking a look at all of this. Is this happening around the country with legislatures?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think something like 12 legislatures actually passed some kind of policy regulating drones, and more than half the states actually considered legislation over the last session to try and regulate the use of drones. I think it's something that legislatures and legislators are really really interested in, and they want to get in on this before it becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, what are the primary things that the ACLU is concerned with, and the conversation starters that you're trying to put forward to policymakers on this issue?
Well, you know, I think Representative Setzer was already mentioned, and we've certainly talked with him, and we supported his bill to try and require a warrant. That's really our starting place with drones is, you know, if they're going to be used by the government to collect information or if the government wants to access information collected privately mm-hmm. to use against someone in a criminal case, that they need to get a warrant to get that information.
Sarah Preston is policy director for the ACLU of North Carolina. Thank you for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Matt, you're out there in Nebraska at the Drone Journalism Lab, and you're investigating ways to use this equipment in the gathering of news and news stories. But your lab received a cease and desist order letter in July from the FAA. What were you doing that caused them to issue that directive?
We were doing journalism.
Well, stop it.
to put it simply, it's kind of interesting in that we took a look at the rules, and we thought that we weren't doing research and development, and we thought that we did not have a commercial interest in what we were doing. We were going to put it on the internet, and that was going to be it. It was going to be on a college website, and there would be no, you know, advertising or anything like that. So we thought that we could fly under the hobbyist rules. Hmm. So we went out on the Platte River, which is a river in the middle of Nebraska. The joke is it's a mile wide and an inch deep. Well, we had just gone through a really historic drought that meteorologically was worse than the Dust Bowl droughts of the Great Depression. And the river went dry for pretty much the entire summer. And it's not unheard of for it to go dry from time to time, but not for the entire summer. And we went out. We had a small UAV. We went up maybe 300 feet in the air. We were in unregulated airspace. We were far from private property. We're only over public lands. You know, it's Nebraska. We have plenty of depopulated places to go fly over. And we did a story about the impact of the drought. And we put it on YouTube, and it's been viewed maybe 15,000 times. And we've had probably 50 or 60 news organizations write stories about it. One of them was the Kansas City Star, and I think that is why the letter came from the Kansas City office of the FAA. So, hey, somebody's reading the paper. I'm yay. what the letter said was, I'm an employee of a public institution, and as an employee of a public institution, I have to follow the public aircraft standards, and I have to get a certificate of authorization. So we're in the process of doing that. They were not upset with us for what we were doing. They didn't say we were acting recklessly or anything like that. It was merely that I'm a professor at a public institution, and so that was a learning experience for us. And we're putting all of our documents for this online, and people can see them, and they can see what the process is like and what kind of questions are asked.
So hobbyists can fly drones, but commercial entities and universities doing research evidently cannot. The FAA has banned all of that, but they've approved six organizations to test applications of drones. And you've complained, Matt, that they are lumping all of these flying contraptions together regardless of size or risk. So what should they be doing? What should their approach be to this?
Well, they're moving towards bifurcating this. The certificate of authorization program, as it is right now, the questions that are asked of you, no matter what kind of aircraft you're coming to them with. So if I bring a $500 DJI Phantom quadcopter to them, they're asking me the same questions that they would with somebody who's bringing a Predator. Now, am I going to get the same level of scrutiny that they are? No. Am I going to have to provide the same level of documentation that they are? No. But there's a lot of questions that I have to say this is not applicable to me. So it's not a very refined process, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And until the FAA starts promulgating regulations, there's this kind of healthy amount of confusion about what exactly we're talking about. So the FAA has said they're going to first give rules out for small UASs. Now, they define small UASs as anything smaller than 55 pounds. That would be, there'll be altitude restrictions. There'll be certain kind of places you can go and not go. Those regulations, I assume, will include some kind of flight standards, some kinds of training standards, some kind of maybe liability insurance coverage. They've said that they will require background checks of applicants for permits. But that's wholly separate and apart from the big ones that fly up in the same airspace as, say, Delta and United Airlines. Mm. And those are the six test sites. Those are primarily about big UASs doing big things in high places.
We've been using these militarily as both surveillance vehicles and weapons delivery systems. And I would think that that has to be a big concern in this world in which we live now, in this where terrorists are lurking behind every corner, if you believe what we're told. And they could get their hands on one of these and use it as a weapons delivery system, could they not? And so how does the FAA, how does law enforcement control against that?
Well, I mean, the cat's already out of the bag on that. You can walk down to a mall and buy a device and put something nefarious on it and do something.
So
with
a hobbyist-style unmanned aircraft, remote-controlled aircraft, could be used to deliver a bomb?
A couple of pounds of C4, sure. It doesn't even have to be a flying device. You could use a remote control car. I mean, basically anything could be turned into a weapon. To demonize a technology because it might be able to be turned into a weapon. Well, a hammer is a weapon. Are we going to start regulating hammers? You can go down a rabbit hole here and never come out. We would ban everything up to butter knives. And so, sure, that already happens, already could happen.
Joe in Charlotte emails, as a former helicopter pilot, I found this all very interesting, but there are some concerns. Most helicopters crash because they run into something at low level, and that's with one or two pilots looking for things. Once a drone leaves line of sight control with its camera looking at the ground, what will prevent collisions with buildings, with power lines, with trees? Heck, with other drones. How do you prevent that? Anybody have a... Kyle, you're working on this, aren't you, down there in Hyde County?
So that is what we're working on. The current regulations that anybody that is approved to fly by the FAA requires line-of-sight operations, so we're not flying anything outside of that. But technologists, engineers, universities really around the planet are working on how do we better identify obstacles, identify our situational awareness, new sensors for communications and object detection.
I mean, automobiles are soon to be outfitted with collision detection devices that will either warn you or prevent a collision from occurring. Can't these be installed on these drones as well?
You're moving a little bit faster in the air than you are on the ground. But
okay.
Yes, there are those kinds of things that are starting to transition over.
Both you and Matt, Kyle, are proponents of this technology, and one of the goals at NextGen is helping the legislature here draw up guidelines and to have them do it in a way that's favorable to business development. If our legislature were to get ahead of the pack, do you see the state becoming a kind of mecca for the development of drone technology?
I hope we do become that. That was what I was brought here to help grow, is that ecosystem here in the state to grow the industry. But then to make sure we are doing it appropriately managed with proper oversight from downtown the policy.
I mean, you say that the industry already wants to come here and that you have industry partners lined up to come if they can fly in multiple locations. Why do they want to come here? Because they want to come anywhere that will let them do it? Or is there something special about North Carolina that makes them want to come here?
They like the diversity we have here, both in our geography and also in the availability of the workforce here, with the engineering talent we have in the state, with the analytics capabilities, the piloting knowledge, and then especially when you look at the veterans that are coming back with 500, 600, thousands of hours of flight time in theater, you're getting this experienced talent pool that a lot of other states can't really offer. So people like what we've got here. In addition to a place to fly, a workforce that's available, we've got manufacturing talents in the state already, ranging from airframers like Honda Jet, Spirit Aerospace, to electronics companies, and they're saying, North Carolina's got kind of the full picture here. That's why industry's looking to say, what can we do to take advantage of that?
So is this a situation where if North Carolina were to play its cards right and open the door first, to be the first to welcome all these developers and experimental drone technologists into our state, that we would be so far ahead of the pack that we would become that would be a new sector of our economy, drone development technology?
That's where Representative Torbett is pushing us towards, is that Detroit of this industry, and that's what we're trying to put in place. But do it with the governance plan that we've put together with multiple agencies and the legislature behind that.
So this would follow up on our first in flight brag. We'd be first in flight and first in flight of unmanned aircraft.
that would be awesome.
Now, I think it's important to kind of lay out. You touched on it a little bit at the beginning here, but all the different ways that these things are starting to be used, right? So Kyle, for instance, has talked about using them for farming in Japan, for instance. Matt and I talked about this when we did my last piece, which was how Japan has used them for farming for decades. They've used drones for crop dusting, which is a dangerous activity, flying low level to the ground. And you can use them for surveillance, figure out, okay, what specific sections need to be crop dusted as opposed to just doing these whole swaths of fields. That's one particular sector. That company that we talked about that's up in Concord, Aerial Captures, they've had inquiries from the oil and gas industry about using drones to check pipeline condition and doing site surveys of rural areas. So there's all kinds of different things like that. And then in addition to that, you've got sort of your Amazon delivering the books that you order and getting same day delivery. You've got Domino's did a test drone flight and delivering pizza. One of my favorites ended up being sort of a joke / conversation starter called Taco Copter. which is exactly what it sounds like, which is where they're talking about. But I was joking about this with the owner of Aerial Captures, and he was like, "Yeah, mine will carry a burrito." I was like, "Okay, great, yeah."
You mentioned Japan, and the USA seems to be behind the curve here because they are using drones in Sochi, Russia, over the ski slopes, so that we can see aerial pictures of the slopes. ESPN and Fox Sports have used drones to cover cricket in Australia. You mentioned Japan, unmanned vehicles. Dusting for crops. They've been doing that for 20 years. Why are we so far behind the curve again? I mean, we seem to be behind the curve on almost everything now. Why this area?
Matt, what do you think about that?
I think it largely has to do with the FAA and how slow they've been moving. They've been talking about unmanned aerial system rules since 2007, and they have not moved forward with them for whatever reason. And the sooner that happens, the sooner that we can get back in this race. Now, if you want a winning issue with the FAA, and we can talk about tacos and pizza and books from Amazon, but there was a guy in Minnesota, and I realize this is not going to play well with a North Carolina audience, but there's the kind of the state sport of Minnesota right now is ice fishing. And if you're out in the middle of a lake ice fishing, it's kind of hard to get things to you. So he was flying cases of beer out to folks out on the lake, and the FAA came in and shut him down. You know, the FAA is shutting down journalists and the public yawns. The FAA shuts down beer delivery, and suddenly I think we have a winning issue here.
Kyle, I know that you expect drones to proliferate here in the next couple of years. The FAA projects that there could be as many as 10,000 drones flying over the U.S. in just the next 3 years. All of this seems relatively inevitable. How difficult to either of you, Matt or Kyle, do you think it will be to reach conclusions about privacy concerns as well as safety and liability issues? Kyle.
I think this is going to take a while yet. I've really been in this industry since about 2000. First couple of big conferences I went to said, 10 years from now we'll have unmanned systems integrated into the airspace. And then 2 years later, 10 years from now, and 2 years later, 10 years from now. I think it will be less than 10 years from now. But to kind of go back to the last point, the United States still has the safest air transportation system on the planet. So the FAA's diligence that they're taking to make sure this is managed appropriately is going to be worth it in the long run. But I think within the next 5 years, we will see commercial operations approved and hopefully take advantage of these economic benefits.
Matt, you got 15 seconds.
Remember that we are a nation of lawyers, so lawsuits are going to follow thereafter. So every optimistic view I've heard, you throw that one in, it takes a little longer.
Well, I can't wait till the day we throw it to the drone in the sky for the latest on the snow coverage here in Charlotte. As a matter of fact, Kyle, you say you cannot think of an industry that would not benefit from the use of drones, so we'll keep our eyes peeled on that. Kyle Snyder, Director of Next Gen Air Transportation Center for NC State University, Matt Waite, Professor of Practice in the College of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and Ben Bradford with WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE, our executive